History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And each and every week, we remind you that they don't have to go untold, if only people like you and me are willing to do something about it. Our goal here has always been to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We aim to preserve their stories so the rest of us don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. We're always educated. We're always entertained in the process. And by the end of the conversation, I don't know about you, but I'm usually pretty inspired as well. Today, we get to meet a centenarian who grew up without a father, raised by his mother, an immigrant from Mexico. He quit school at 14 to help support his mother and his sister. A few years later, he joined the Navy, surviving some seriously close calls in the Pacific. John Duran grew up in Fowler, California. That's where he lives today as he zeroes in on his 102nd birthday. But we're going to start out at the beginning. John, what do you remember about growing up here in Fowler in the 1920s and 30s?
All I can remember, I went to school, the grader. When I went into freshman, I quit school to work. I worked since I was 14 years old until I was 18. Then I volunteered to go to the service, and I volunteered because I wanted to go to the Army. I wanted to go to the Navy. And from there on, I was in the Navy in 43, and I went to serve the first part of 44.
I'd be interested to know, before that, before you ever thought about the war, the Great Depression years here in Fowler, what was life like for you?
Well, when I was 9 years old, I used to help my mother work because I didn't have a dad. I used to have to support my mother and my sister. I used to work on a farm, and used to pick grapes, prune them, and all that, the service that went with them. And as the years went on, the war started in 41, and I had a deferment in 41, and in 42, and in 43, I told my mother that I was going to join the Navy to help the country fight the war. And when I was 18 years old, I went to fight.
I'm thinking about kids today have a very different life than when you were a kid. What kinds of things did you do when you were running around as a kid here in Fowler?
Okay, when I was going to school, buildings were becoming to here in Fowler. And I used to like to watch the carpenters, the plumbers, the electricians. Everything stayed in my mind. When I was 9 years old, my mother and I, working, we saved money. We bought a place here in Fowler on 4th Street. It was a burned-down home with two rooms that we lived in. When I went in there, I started building. I built a home, three bedrooms, a kitchen, a service porch, and a bathroom. I did the plumbing and the electricity, all of it. When I was working in Fowler, I used to change services from 30 amps to 60 or 100 amps. I had a good knowledge of all of that. I don't know why, but I built our home in town and in ranch. As we went on, I bought the farm, 20 acres, we still have it. When I was 18 years, I went to join the service. And all the time that I was here in Fowler, I kept working on production of grapes, farming. Then I went into a company that made Coke machines, that's in Fresno. And then from there on, I kept going up. And then I went into work for Caltrans. When I went to work for Caltrans, I already come back to the service. I worked 20 years for Caltrans as an electrician. I was a number one electrician for Caltrans. I first went to Bakersfield. After 2 days working in Bakersfield, the superintendent brought me to Tulare. In Tulare, I stayed 4 years working as an electrician. And then from there, I came to Fresno. In Fresno, I worked over 20 years as an electrician one. Before all that, naturally, I went to the service. I spent the 2.5 years in the service.
And I want to talk to you about that. I'm wondering if you remember December 7th, 1941, and how you heard about it.
Well, yes, I heard about that. Yeah, it was on the radio, some paper, newspaper. That's when I decided to join the service. My mother didn't want me to go because I could have gotten deferred all the time. I didn't have to go because I was in agriculture. But I told, no, mother, I'm going to go to help this country fight the Japanese. When I was 18 years, I left.
And I know you had already dropped out of school, but I'm guessing that here in Fowler, you probably had some classmates or friends that were Japanese-American?
Oh, yeah. I had a kid named Toyota Tayama. I used to even wrestle and play with him when I was in grammar school. And they left to go to Japan when the war started. I never saw them again. But I used to work for Japanese farmers. And I used to hear them talking about telling me that one day I was going to be working for the Japanese Empire. And okay, I says, I'll be working for you. But in my mind, I used to say, you guys are crazy. When I was in the service, my first island that I experienced that we had landed was in the String of Islands in Japan. But that's where I got hit in the head. And then I lost my hearing and my eyesight, double vision. When we hit that island, we came back, then we hit Leyte. In Leyte, the first landing we made in Leyte, coming out of a fog that was created by the guys that created the fog, we kept hearing, there's a ship there ahead, the captain would give somebody a green right order, and pretty soon the radar would come around, that ship still dead ahead of us. But 4 times that happened. On the 4th time we came out of the fog, the ship was right in front of us, and the ship comes up, they dropped anchors and everything, and they ran the battle wagon Tennessee. The reason that ship was ahead of us, it was putting salvos into the island of Leyte. Every time the ship went out to sea, we kept going and kept going. 4 times we came out, we rammed it. It took about 2 hours and a half, back and forth, trying to pull away from the ship. Our bow was like this. So we used to have to keep the ship the other way to keep the ship going straight. We used to be able to 18 knots. After that, we were only able to do 14. The ship came back to the States. They repaired it. And I went back to the war zone on an LSD, another amphibious ship. We hit Okinawa. But before that, when we were hitting Leyte, and then we went to Luzon. In Luzon, we were anchored at 4 o'clock in the morning. We had put all our boats in the water, landing boats. I took a folding bed and I put it on the deck, myself and 4 other personnel, and we were sleeping on the deck. At 4 o'clock in the morning, we heard bang on the ship. I got up and I started walking towards the side to see what it was. Then a big explosion, and the ship started doing this. But being that we were close to the island of Luzon, we were sitting on the bottom of the ship, but we didn't sink. Right after that, 2 tugboats came by, and they straightened us up, pumped the water, and we transferred water from one side to the other to keep the ship upright. We came on around back to Leyte, and they put us on a dry dock. They took us and they put a patch on it, and we came back to the States. We stayed a month in the States. We went back on our last day.
And that was a Japanese suicide boat that rammed you, right?
Yeah.
What did that feel like? That woke you up, huh?
Oh, man. The bang was terrific. We'd be a bounce off of the beds. But I went to see the nose was gone. And I got up, went to the stern, got on my LCM, and went around. We had army at that time on the ship. They were all jumping to the sea. with my L team, I start picking them all up. And they turned the boat, I put them back up with the ship. And the ship came back to the States. They brought us back because we had been making landings. And the captain said, I'm taking the figures back because they wanted to leave us. And they brought us to, for 1 month. Then we went back on our LSD. One that sinks in the water, you drive your boat in the back. From there on, we kept landing on the islands. The first liner we had, like I say, on the string of island Japanese, it had a barrier all around it. Volcano had erupted and made a barrier. We loaded troops, Marines, on each of those LVT docks. They would crawl over the reef into the bay. And everyone that went up got knocked out. A whole bunch of them. I don't know how many because I didn't come but one. And by then they had cleared the channel and we started taking troops in there. On my first troop, after we landed troops, I took a load of bazooka shells on cargo nets. On the left cargo net that we put it on, one of them came out of the cargo net, a bazooka shell like this, and the guy on top of the ship yelled at me, Duran, he says, catch this. But I didn't hear the catch this. I said, what? I went like this, and the thing had already dropped, caught me here. I went down. I was sitting on the bottom of the moat, and the Marine that was in my boat, the driver of the truck, they had put in my landing barge. He came down, he rubbed my neck, and I came to, and I asked the rules, yeah, well, let's go. I said, when we get ready to hit the beach, I'll let you get on your truck, start the engine, put it on four-wheel drive. When I hit the beach, I'll drop the ramp, you take off and stop. As soon as you get off, I don't do it because you'll get stuck in the sand. And so my boat's going to come back. I'm going to put everything forward, and I will full speed, and I'll shove you out of the wind. He said, okay. I did it. He took off. I turned around, came back. And by the time we unloaded our ship and the convoy that was off, they brought the convoy that was going to an island that had army personnel, and we started unloading. We got it almost unloaded. After we unloaded, we came back to Hawaii, picked a load of Marines, and took them to Leyte. And then later on to Luzon, and that's when the ship got hit. And it went back to the States. I came back on a different ship, and we went to Okinawa. In Okinawa, we're getting ready to invade the big island of Japan. And then they dropped the two bombs, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they surrendered, and we went in. I went in there, took a load of stuff with my LCM, and then I came back. I flew on a B-29, and I helped unload the stuff, and they brought all kinds of stuff for the Japanese, and the war was over, actually.
So when you got knocked out, what was he throwing to you that hit you in the head?
Oh, a bazooka shell. On my last boat that I drove up to the island, I loaded it with bazooka shells, about five nets full of them, on my ton and a half truck. The truck, I landed, the truck took off. Well, when they were loading the bazooka shells, one of them came out, and I was standing right next to the ship. I was putting the back tubes on the truck to take off, and the guy yelled at me, Duran, he's catch this, but I didn't hear the catch it. I said, what? And he let it go, caught me here, I went down. Since then, my hearing, I have to watch lips to understand what I'm hearing. Yeah. I got double vision, I see two of you.
And that's for the last 80 years you've had that, huh?
I'm that way. Since then.
But it hasn't slowed him down much. It is time for our first break, but there's so much more to come with 101-year-old John Duran of Fowler, California. We'll hear more of what he endured aboard the USS Warhawk in the Pacific during World War II when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 101-year-old Navy veteran John Duran of Fowler, California. He served aboard the USS Warhawk, a transport and troop ship that landed troops at Saipan and Guam, as well as Leyte and Luzon in the Philippines. So you told me about some intense moments, and I'm sure there are more, but your day-to-day life aboard ship, what was that like? How'd you get along with the other sailors?
I got perfect. I went up and right from a apprentice seaman. I came out second-class boatswain's mate.
And what were all the duties you had aboard ship?
On our ship, it was a five-holer, a cargo ship. We had 40 meters and 20 meters on the front of the ship. On the back of the ship, we had some more 40 meters, 30 meters, and then we had some 3-inch guns, and then we had a 5-inch gun on the front. I used to be captain of the 5-inch gun, and every time the 3-inch guns would go, forget for hearing. A crack like that, the two guns. Yeah, I used to come out of general quarters, I couldn't hear.
And did you have a special relationship with the captain of your ship?
I'm glad you asked that, because on the captain that I had on my ship, it was the USS Warhawk, 168. I used to be his coxswain for his little boat to go to the islands. I used to drive him around. I knew him very well.
Well, that could be a dangerous job, because if there's anyone the enemy wants to kill, it's the captain, right?
Yeah, we used to anchor over there, and then on the islands that they had already conquered, they used to have beer joints, I guess, because he used to go, and he'd spend 2-3 hours, and he'd come back, he'd send sailors to bring me Cokes for drink. He was a real good captain, yeah.
It sounds like he trusted you a lot.
Oh, yeah, he used to talk about him, and he used to say, you're doing a good job.
Now, I've had a few sailors over the years who felt if they were Mexican-American or Latino, that they were treated differently than the white sailors. Did you ever run into anything like that?
Aboard my ship, there was no difference. We had a good commander, a good personnel. I had friends from Qatar, a boy named Charlie Felix, and a couple other Mexican kids that were in there. There was only about 4 Mexicans aboard ship. Charlie Felix used to be a skipper of a VP, and I was happened to be a skipper of an LCM. I used to carry tanks, quite a few soldiers, Marines.
I'm wondering, too, had you ever been aboard a ship before you went on the Warhawk? Had you ever been on the ocean at all?
Not really. We used to go down to California. We used to get on ships that belonged to people from the movies. We used to go visit them. And then at one time, when I was learning about the amphibious. I was in Coronado. Mm-hmm. We were stationed on one of the ships, one of those.
The yachts that the Navy commandeered?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And in Coronado, we learned how to land the boats and all, back them up the surf. And when I left Coronado, I was a seaman first class aboard ship. After being a couple of months, I was aboard the mate second class, went up on rate. And I took the test for first class and then for boatswain's mate, but I never got it because I didn't have time in the service.
I'm wondering, too, when you left Fowler to go to the Navy, was it hard to say goodbye to your mom and your sister?
My mom didn't want ever to go. She made me look down. She blessed me when I says, I'm going. Either you bless me to go or I'm going to leave. She says, okay. Kneel down. She blessed me. But you're going to make me a promise that if you come back alive, you're going to go to Mexico and visit the Virgin of San Juan and give her thanks to bring you back. I said, Mother, why do you make those promises? Well, that's the only way you go. You tell me that you promised to go. I did. I went to Mexico, and I visited her.
Well, and I'm just guessing, there were probably some moments where you weren't sure you were going to make it back. Do you remember some close calls or scary moments in the Navy?
Oh, yeah. When I got here in my head, I could have died. When I came back from the landing, I started up the gangway. Mm-hmm. Halfway up the gangway, I remember grabbing the line. The post was right here. I grabbed it here. I passed out. This hand was on this post. This leg was hanging over the side. The boatswain's mate went down and held me from going over the side. The only thing that saved me, the ship was rolling that way when I went down. So I was against the ship, and he came down. When the ship went this way, he was holding me. They picked me up and carried me into sick bay. 3 days out, yeah. The fourth day, I'm coming out of it in the morning. The personnel that was taking care of me, it was in the morning, they were talking, three of them, they were talking about going to have breakfast. And when they came back, they were going to bring a plastic bag to put the body in the bag. And I'm wondering, I'm trying to come out of the being out, and I'm thinking, I wonder who died. They were talking about me. I came back, I was sitting on the bench, and I asked the guy, hey, who died? My God, he's alive. You mean I died? Yeah, we thought, we couldn't feel no pulse, because I'm trying to come out of it. Yeah. But they wouldn't give me nothing. No shots, no nothing. They walked me back and forth on the bow of the ship. And I says, why don't you give me some captain's order? I mean, the medical officer's orders. No shots because you become addicted. Back and forth. After about 5 times going back, my pain started releasing. But every time I took a step, it was somebody hitting in my head. Finally, after 3-4 days, I was okay.
Did your ship get torpedoed?
I don't know if it was a torpedo or what it was, but it hit the ship, the side. The ship rolled over, but it didn't sink.
And where were you at the time?
I was sleeping on the deck. And when it got hit, I practically got knocked off of the bed. I went to the side, and I could see water running in. I crawled all the way back to the stern. I took my rope, I went down, got on my boat, took it out, and went around picking up the soldiers that were jumping into the water.
What would you say was the hardest thing for you to deal with?
You know, I never was scared. I never feared of getting killed or anything. Why, I don't know. Because like when I hit Luzon, from later we had to go around like this to Luzon. When we were there, I stopped. I was getting ready for next morning to start unloading the troops. And then the suicide boat hit us, and the ship rolled over, all the guys started jumping. I had already unloaded the boats in the water. I took my LCM around and started picking them up. And after that, we went back to Lady. They were gonna leave us there, and the captain said, no way. We made land with these boats. I'm taking back the state for leave. So they came back to give us 1 month, then another ship was brought back to Okinawa.
Tell me about the typhoon.
That was something. We were in Okinawa. I was the only had a boat left. Our ship where we were stationed, the movies thing, went down. All our boats went under. Our cargo ship was stuck on reefs out at sea about 15 miles from where we were at. The storm was horrible. I had taken out a supply, food and stuff and all that, to two ships, Navy ships. I was out at sea when the storm hit. I never went back to anchor at the island, because if I'd have gone, the ship would have busted. I stayed out there riding the island. At 12 o'clock, I told the guys, well, get ready, because I'm going to land the boat. Why? He said, we're doing good out here. I'm running out of fuel. If I lose the fuel, we're going to hit the island right. So I said, okay, boat, you know what you're doing. I waited out here in the back. When a big saw came in, I rode it. I aimed it towards a crane that was on the beach. Right next to the crane, that was, they built where the ships can come in. Because they was all busting up with the weight. And I aimed it right next to it, to this crane that was sitting way back in there, about 2,000 yards. On the swell, I came, I landed about 100 feet away from the crane. We went and got a cable and tied the boat. Both like this on the side. I went and made eight ways. I tied them. Do you know that those things were like this when the storm went out? Pulling, pulling.
It almost didn't hold.
Yeah. After that, I was the only one had boats floating around.
And that was an LCM?
Yeah, an LCM. After the storm went out, two captains from the ship on the rocks came by. They asked me if I'd take them out the ship. They drove right over the horizon. I said, okay, so took up. And the island just disappeared. And finally, I saw the ship about 4 or 5 feet of water. The ship was on the rocks. They brought all their gear stuff. And he told me, help yourself, whatever you find in here, take. The ship had about 10 or 15 amphibious boats on top. But there's no way to take them down. And they got their stuff. I brought them back to the ship. The guy found out, because I told him that number 4 hole is full of coke, number 5 hole is full of beer. At night, they used to take the boat, my boat, up to the ship, and they're raiding it back and forth. the place that we were on was a floating hotel deal. The guy used to take the beer and put it in the empty lockers. They had just about every locker full of beer and coke. And one night, a couple of officers were having to take them to a ship. And those crazy guys were halfway drunk from the beer. They reported them. MPs came home and started looking on the funnel of that beer. They constipated, but they didn't take it away from us. They put it in a place with a book, you couldn't get into it. But they give the guys on party leave, they give them to me, they came to the kid. I never liked beer, so I never got any.
Tell me about, you had to go recover some bodies of guys who were killed on your ship?
The bodies that were killed, I had to pick them out of the number 4 hole and put them in plastic bags to take them out. 90 boys were dead. They were killed.
How hard was that? How hard of a task was that?
I sent 3 guys down there. They got sick on me. They couldn't stand the smell. I put on a paper mask and I went down. I put them where they went. It didn't bother me. When I was in Fowler, one day going to a dance in Fresno, the Malaga overpass, a woman had a wreck up there, and she got out of the truck and her car. A truck came by and killed her. There was pieces of bodies of that woman all over. I had to stop and pick them up, and the kid that was with me was from Fowler. His name was Peter Huerta. He got sick on me. He couldn't used to go picking those bodies. I picked them up, and then we went on.
So that may have prepared you for what you faced in the Navy.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't bother me to pick those dead bodies. The heads, the arms, the legs, the bodies. But my boatswain's mate, the officer, he told me, he said, when you get sick, get out. I'm okay, I told him. I might as well get rid of all these bodies and then quit. I don't know what they did with the bodies. A woman from Kingsburg, her husband's father, he was one of the dead ones. We met him at a Sunday meeting. She was talking to my wife about this husband's father had died on the ship. She told him, well, that's the ship my husband was riding. He picked all those dead men out of that hole.
Wow. So here on the other side of the world, You meet the family of one of the guys whose bodies you recovered.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, no, I tell you, it was hard on me picking all those boys, 90 of them.
Did you guys do a burial at sea?
No, all of them were taken in. They're at Lady, where they got killed in Luzon. They took them over the ship, and they did something with them on the island. Yeah. MacArthur.
There's an American cemetery there on Luzon that they're probably in. When you're doing something like that, and you see all these guys just like you who are no longer alive, is there part of you that thinks that could have been me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was very fortunate.
It's time for our final break, but we'll explore more of why he feels so fortunate when we come back. 101-year-old John Duran of Fowler, California is our guest today. You can even find a short video with John at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. Ever feel like that dollar just doesn't go as far anymore? Well, join the club. Actually, you really should join the club. I mean, join the more than 350,000 members of EECU, the not-for-profit credit union now in 12 California counties. Free online and mobile banking, more than 30,000 co-op ATMs, and not just fair, but fantastic rates on auto loans, mortgages, and home equity lines of credit. Go to myeecu.org to become a member today, or just call this number, 1-800-538-3328. When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend, it's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is, Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, coming down the home stretch with World War II veteran John Duran of Fowler, California. He'll turn 102 next month, but his memories of World War II are still quite vivid. The last thing he said before we left off was that he was very fortunate to make it home from the war. Aren't we all thankful for that? I'm also thankful for his son, Ray, a longtime pastor, who accompanied his father on an honor flight years ago and helped facilitate this interview. John had agricultural deferments and could have sat out the entire war, but when he turned 18, he joined the Navy, and for several battles in the Pacific, he was taking troops and vehicles to shore and back in LCMs, that's Landing Craft Mechanized, from the USS Warhawk.
I was fortunate because I never came close. When I was making landings on Lady, I was going by from the shore. They would throw those mortar shells, they'd break you, and then the next one would hit you. Well, when the one came here, I went that way. And then they threw it again, and I went the other way. I went like this. I hit the beach, and we had soldiers already on the beach making landings. One time when I hit the beach, I dropped the gate, and the soldiers are running to the beach. On the beach, some of the soldiers had gotten prisoners from the case, and they didn't realize that in the ground they had caves. They came out of the caves behind them with machine guns, and they started shooting. They all dropped down, and then the guys, we had machine guns, we started shooting them, and we knocked them down.
And you're watching all of that?
Oh, yeah. One thing that I remember, I don't know why, I never was afraid. When we were coming from Luzon back to Leyte, like I said, our ship had gotten hit, and sometimes we were standing still. The zero planes would come morning and evening, dropping bombs on us. They never hit us. The shells were big, 20 foot so. One time we went down here, next time here. Every one of those planes hit the water.
So they tossed you around on the ocean, but you never got hit.
Most of our time, we came around, the ship started singing, we heard you got sunk. And then another ship we heard sunk. How come before they were sunk? The bombs never hit us. But they reported they had sunk us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the USS Warhawk.
So you told us a story where the body bag had your name on it and your friends thought you were dead. And here's reports of your ship being sunk, but you're still afloat. When you think back on all that, do you think someone was looking out for you?
You know, when we got hit and we came back, they lifted the ship on the floor in dry dock. The ship went back to the States. We came back. They made the ship a passenger ship, a luxury ship. They never went back to war.
But you went back on an LST. When you think about it now, 80 years ago now, do you think that God was protecting you? How do you explain it?
I think it was just luck.
Yeah.
But like I say, I was never afraid of getting hit. Mm-hmm. Why, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I used to drive my boat around there. Shells were dropping here and there. Never got hit.
And you mentioned the two bombs got dropped and Japan surrendered. Was there some celebration where you were when Japan surrendered?
Well, all the kids were happy. Yeah. But on the island of Okinawa, the storm that hit had wiped all the camps. There wasn't a camp. Even the post office was just treating it as a flu.
That typhoon wiped everything out, huh?
Yeah. Myself, I wrote the storm. Up and down, up and down. When I started running out of fuel about midnight, that's when I told my three guys, I'm going to have to hit the beach. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we landed, went over to a big concrete building where all the people from the club were all around. The place inside was full, and all the on the east side of the wind, all the other was sitting outside. When I landed the boat, we all got up. We all had to crawl to the building. You couldn't walk with the wind so strong.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was it like to come back home and see your mother again?
How was it to come back home?
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. But when I did, the ship came back, I got transferred to an ARL, a repair ship.
Mm-hmm.
I could have come home. I had the time. But they wouldn't let me go because they didn't have no enlisted man aboard the ship.
Mm.
So they kept me 4 months
mm-hmm.
after the war was over. I used to tie ships alongside to repair them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you remember the day that you finally got back to Fowler to see your mother?
My mother had died.
Oh, no.
Yeah, in 46.
Uh-huh.
the first of 46, she was sick. I wanted to come home because I was able to, but the officer on the ship wouldn't let me out because he didn't have no servicemen to tie ships and all that. The guy was a fresh guy that had taken the ship. He didn't know nothing of tying the ship.
Yeah.
He didn't have no personnel.
So your mother was sick, and you found out the war is over, but the Navy wouldn't let you come see her.
Yeah.
Wow. That had to be hard for you.
Yeah, I came back 4 months after the war was over. She was already dead.
Was it hard for you to get back to civilian life after that?
Not really. I mean, I was used to work, and I went back to work for a guy that had 160 acres. The guy's name was Dick Good. I worked for him 1 year. He used to have Japanese working for him. After I went in, they left, because I used to do all the work myself. They used to tell me, customers this way. I used to tell them, I'm going to do it my way.
Do you know what happened to the Japanese farmers that you used to work for?
They all put in concentration camps.
Yeah.
And then they came back work again. Hagihara went back to the ranch from Pistol St. Louis as a foreman. They never was mistreated. They were mistreated pretty good. I talked to him, and he said the only thing that they weren't making money.
Your mother made you promise to go visit the lady in Mexico.
My mother was a very Catholic religious.
And all these other families, they were hoping their boys would come home. I understand you had to go gather dog tags at one point so the families would know whether their sons were lost.
Oh, yeah. From the boys who got killed.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I pick a bunch of them, take them to the hospital. We lost a lot of boys there.
Do you remember when you and Ray got to go on the honor flight to Washington to see the memorial?
It was just a trip that they gave, like me, to go over there, and we visited 3-4 different places, and they fed us. The trip was pretty good. We came back. And that's your mind. He was a Green Beret. He was there. He got killed in Vietnam. There were 6 of them standing on row talking. And this Vietnam that was supposed to be friendly, he came by and he threw a hand grenade in the middle of them. And my nephew jumped on it, killed himself, saved all the others.
Wow.
Yeah, in the memorial was Eddie Zamora.
Was that emotional for you to see that?
Oh, yeah. I went red. I told the guys I went with, this is my nephew. And I told him what he did. And I told him, if it would have been me, I'd jump the other way.
But you volunteered for some pretty tough duty in your own tour. And I'm just wondering what you thought about at the World War II Memorial when you saw all those gold stars. And some of them are for those guys that you pulled out of the War Hawk after that suicide boat. And that could have been you up there. Did you think about that at all?
Yeah. I thought it was horrible to have seen all those poops die. Not only the ones from there, but the ones from the islands that got bombed on and all that, like the Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. To me, war is horrible. But like I said, when they hit the islands, I told my wife, and not my wife, I told my mother I was going to fight the enemy. She didn't want me to go, because I didn't have to go.
So it's been 80 years since this all happened, and most people alive today don't know that much about it. What do you think we need to understand and remember about World War II and what you all did?
Well, you know, the people that are here don't know what war is. I went through it. When I joined to go over there and defeat the army of the Japanese. And we went and we did it. I'm fortunate that I came back alive from the head and from shooting at me. I'd go down there, I'd have my head down, and I could hear shells hitting the thing. Like I say, I was very fortunate. I could have died from the blow in the head, especially when I started up the gangway and I passed out. If the ship had been going like this, I would have gone down to the water. I would have drowned.
And yet you're still here. And when's your birthday?
In November, that'll be 102.
So what's your secret to being in this kind of shape at almost 102?
Well, like I say, all my friends used to drink beer, alcohol, smoke. I never did those things. My mother used to smoke 2 cigarettes a day, one in the morning, one at night, no more. She died when she was 46 years old, 48, I mean. She was born in 1898.
When you think back over more than a century on this planet, is there something you'd say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm proud that I'm in this country. I went to fight for her. I've always thought that the relationship with this country was 1 in 100. What I have is from this country. My mother, when she was young, she came here. She had me and my sister. My sister died when she was 78. Her husband was a soldier in the army. He died. So I can't blame any. I can't say anything about this country. If another war would come for this, I would volunteer, but I don't know where they would take me.
And what keeps you going? What motivates you now?
Well, now my health is kind of bad. My feet won't carry me much. I can't walk a lot. I get tired. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to try to stay here as long as the good Lord takes me.
Well, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story.
You're more than welcome. Like I say, if they have a war, I would volunteer. I don't think they would take me. You never know. But the funny part, I never was afraid. I don't know why. I never thought of dying. It never came to my mind. Wow. I used to like to drive my LCM. Doom, doom.
You think you could still do that if they took you to an LCM?
Oh, yeah. 2 engines. I could spin around on a dime. This back from this one forward, beautiful.
Let me ask you one more question. I don't know if you can answer this or not. Do you think that dropping the atomic bombs saved your life?
If we would have had Tokyo, everybody had wooden spears out of bamboo waiting for us. It would have been a disaster for a lot of the boats. My boat had 2 crews to replace anybody got killed. We had about maybe 60 LCMs to hit. I'm not sure how many there were.
So if we hadn't have dropped the bombs, you would have spent your 22nd birthday that November going into Japan.
You know, when the war was over, I flew on a B-29 to see Japan. Mm-hmm. I saw where they dropped the bombs on both cities. It was a disaster. All the poor people that weren't fighting died. But let's say war is horrible. I didn't enjoy that at all.
Candid, genuine perspective from a man who lived through it all. John Duran, 101 years old of Fowler, California. He'll reach 102 next month. You can find a video of Mr. Duran on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com. We're out of time on the radio today, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.
If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.